Okay, hello everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Jim and Fear 138 podcast. This is another one where I just don't have a plan. I don't know what I was expecting. I was talking with Alexander. He wants to come on the show and talk about Elder Scrolls and stuff like that. So I was like, well, sure, yeah. When are you free? He's like, oh, I'm free on Saturdays. I'm like, fuck, I gotta have a show for Saturday. So here I am on Thursday with nothing to fucking talk about. So I figure if I run my mouth long enough, eventually something that pisses me off will crop up, and then I can just yell about that for 20 minutes. Actually, there is something that has pissed me off. And this, let this be a lesson to you, children. Let this be a lesson from your Uncle fucking Jimbo, okay? Proof, read your goddamn tweets, okay? Proof, read it. As a matter of fact, just proof, read everything that you put on the fucking internet, okay? This messes me off so badly. Oh my god. So, just take my word for it, okay? Like, here's what happened, alright? I was shitposting on Twitter today, and just, you know, doing my normal thing, having fun, yelling at people, whatever. Just talking shit. And, I didn't think anything of it, man. But, I quote tweeted James Woods. Something about DACA, ending DACA, the Dream Act. The Dream Act was going to create like X number of jobs. I don't even fucking remember what. I can find it. I can find it. No fucking problem. It's like what my activity feed is fucking filled with. Here we go. So, I had quote tweeted James Woods, and he had pasted a Breitbart article from the Zuckerberg group. I don't think it's the same Zuckerberg. I don't know. Breitbart, I don't have any money to give you. Fuck off. Oh, no, it was Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg's Open Borders Organization. Here's the top thing. A study by Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg's Open Borders Organization revealed that if an Obama-created amnesty program for young illegal aliens is ended, it would open nearly 70,000, or 700,000. There we go, 700,000. Sorry, there's more to this story. My brain isn't functioning properly right now, which is why I have the beer. Jesus. It would open up nearly 700,000 American jobs. So I'm not entirely sure how that, maybe we'll go through this whole article right here. I mean, it's Breitbart, so take it for what it's worth. But I had, quote tweeted that James Woods tweet where he just went, oops, and posted that article. And I had said, so basically ending DACA will almost single-handedly fix the economy. Neat, because I was posting from my phone and the I and the O are right next to each other and my thumbs are kind of big. So I hit O and I didn't proofread my tweet. And then what happens is that somebody, and I'm going to fucking find whoever this is. I'm going to find your ass and I'm going to strangle you to fucking death for putting this cancer into my notifications feed. And distributing my cancer to everybody else. By the way, this is a two-way street. Somebody put this tweet in front of Ann motherfucking Coulter. And she decided it would be a great idea to just retweet it. Just, hey, this fucking nobody with weird avatar on Twitter who's got a typo in this tweet, just retweet that. Put him in front of, how big is her fucking audience? Hang on, I gotta go find out how many followers Ann Coulter has. There we go. She has 1.6 million followers. Oh god, I'm not gonna be able to check my notifications feed for like 3 days. Oh god. I'm just dying over this. Oh god. Look, I'm not like mad about it or anything. Like the thing that pisses me off about this, like I don't think that I'm wrong necessarily. Like I'm open to correction, but like opening up 700,000 jobs would open up 700,000 jobs for legal Americans, which would get a certain percentage of the American populace back to work, which would lower unemployment, which would up GDP, which would, you know, get our economy moving again. instead of just like stagnating like it did under Barack Obama. Which, that's not me talking shit about Obama, that's a fact. So getting rid of these 700,000 people, or whatever, however the fuck it works, we'll go through the Breitbart article in a minute. But getting rid of all of these people would be good for the American economy, essentially. But the thing that pisses me off is that I didn't proofread that tweet before I hit post. So let me be a fucking lesson. Oh yeah, hi Agma, I just saw that message. Oum, I just saw that fucking message. Yuck it up, motherfucker. Yuck it up. People are going to be listening to this 3 days from now like, what the fuck, dude? But no, just take it from me. Because there's nothing more frustrating than to go through that and then to put something out there like that and not fucking care about it and not think that it's going to go anywhere and then have it go somewhere and then have to stare at your own fucking typo a million times. Well, it wasn't a million. It's got like, I don't even fucking know. Hang on. They linked it in this goddamn, oh wait, no, that's just a picture. Fuck you guys. 107 retweets and 343 likes. This is my most spread tweet, and it's got a typo in it, and it bothers the absolute dog shit out of me because I'm that fucking OCD. Proofread your shit. Please. God, please proofread your shit. Because that's the thing that pisses me off. And I had no idea that this was going on. Like I said, I went and took a nap, fam. Like, I had like a... It sounds stupid, but I had an upset stomach. I don't know what I had gotten into. You know, it's not like I'm a fucking dog, like I'm out there eating antifreeze or some shit. But I had the stomach bug, so I was like, alright, I'm just gonna go take a nap for a couple hours and see if it'll just work its way out of my system. And it did, I'm feeling better now. But I woke up. And the first thing I saw when I checked my activity feed, bear in mind, my brain's not firing properly at this point in the story, was this person who had quote tweeted me saying, President Trump follows this person. And for a minute there, I was like, oh shit, really? when did this happen? When did the president follow me? And why? What the fuck? Then I realized she was talking about Ann Coulter. But I don't think this person understands how quote tweeting works. She says she's a 30-something-year-old bookworm photographer and cat wrangler. It's not really a surprise. I don't think she really understands how quote tweeting works, because the president doesn't follow me. I went and checked. Yeah, I actually did go and check my followers, and the president is not among them. So you can all cool your jets. I'm not that important. I just got retweeted by a bimbo that used to work for Fox News. Oh, God. I'm sorry, but that's like the biggest news that I had this week was that shit happening, which is sad, but I don't get out much, so. I mean, I know that there's other stuff that happened, but this, like, just went down, and I'm still, like, it doesn't feel like, everything feels surreal right now. Like, I feel like I'm living in a Richard Linklater movie. Maybe more beer will help. We'll have to see. But anyway, a couple of people were interested in the old school D&D battle report sit rep thing that I gave last time I had one of these solo podcasts. So nothing much is really happening. Like, we finally got one of our guys back, the talkative, like the kind of leader of the party, who I did not know was playing a female character until the last session. I really didn't get it. They're playing an elf, and the avatar that they have on Roll20 is like, I can't fucking tell male and female elves apart. They all look alike to me. Intense fantasy racism. I had no fucking idea that this guy was playing a female elf. But we are progressing through the Lost City fairly well. We found a cult. Three cults. No, four. Four cults. Four cults, actually. One of them is, like, warriors. One of them we didn't really talk to because they were in the middle of a... It was exactly like that scene in the movie where the main characters are just like running around opening doors and shit, and then they run in on these people doing like a wedding ceremony or something, and then they're like, "Ooh, okay, bye, sorry," and they just kind of quietly shut the door and leave. Like, we pulled that shit because we're just like exploring. Like, nobody said y'all shouldn't go here, or y'all shouldn't do this, so we were just kind of wandering around trying not to die, and we opened up one door. And it's just filled with like 20 people all in the middle of, like, in the exact middle of a religious ceremony. And we were like, ooh, ooh. Like, they put me in charge because I had the highest charisma. And I'm sat here like, why? Why would you ask me to, the anemic fucking, I'm not talkative. No, fuck this. We're leaving. These people are obviously in the middle of a very important ceremony. And I don't want to incur their ill will by interrupting them. So let's just go and wait for him to finish. There's other rooms we can go check. So we went and did that. And we found another cult. We don't even know what that one does. We found another cult that's like all warrior women. Lads. But they weren't really happy about the guys. Oh, here comes David. Sorry, David J. West just replied to that shit. It never ends. There are these warrior women, and one of us joined them and got like their holy symbol and a tattoo, which is kind of badass. And then we just kind of, that was about where we had, no, then we got some followers of the bad guys, the bad cult. They like showed up and they seemed very confused. They were like wandering around in single file to hide their numbers, and they thought that there were snakes all over the floor. Like, they were pointing at the snakes like, look, there's snakes on the floor, don't step on them, they're poisonous. And we're like, all right, these guys are deranged, so let's just kill them. And I put, I think, all of them to sleep. It was like three or four, something like that. And then they like killed the other ones. And I ran up in the background and just started stabbing people in the neck with my little silver dagger. I gotta get some kind of use out of it. I paid fucking 30 gold for it. And that's where we ended the last session. And I don't think there has been a session since then. If there has, I have not been informed of it. Maybe Discord is just being slow. Maybe I missed it. I don't know. But not to my knowledge. So it's coming along, and it's still way more fun. Like, even with these shorter sessions, and because, like, the Laughably Dapper one would go on for, like, 4 or 5 fucking hours. Like, we would start at, like, 10 o'clock at night, my time, and be getting done at around, like, 1, 2, 3, something like that. So, even with these shorter sessions, it's still a lot more fun than, like, 3.5 Pathfinder, stuff like that. I really like how harsh the rules are. I really, really like how harsh the rules are. Because it really forces you to consider literally everything you do. Otherwise, you're going to die. So the game is a lot of fun. If anybody out there is interested in like a tighter knit D&D system than like 3.5 and beyond, I would recommend going and looking up the Moldvay Basic rule set. You can probably find a PDF out there. I'll almost guarantee you they have one up on TG. And it's out of print, so I don't think anybody's going to care that you're passing around a PDF or whatever. But, like, this is how slick the rules are in this. You know how in regular D&D, like, modern D&D, you have to, as the player, you have to know the rules for like, your character, and you have to keep up with, like, your spellbook and everything like that? If you're a sorcerer, you know. That was the way I always played it, was sorcerer. So this is a new kind of experience for me, because I always played sorcerers, because I like the idea of having the entire spellbook open to me at any point in time. I could just do whatever I wanted, but only a certain number of times a day. So if I have 3 cantrips that I can cast a day, then I can cast any three cantrips that I want. But if I'm playing a wizard, and this is like 3.5 and beyond, if I'm playing a wizard, I have to sit down at the start of each session or at the start of each day and memorize my spells. So I can only pick 3, and I have to pray that those 3 are going to be useful. So I can bring like create water, make light, and make food or something like that. Like, cantrips really aren't all that useful. But I can bring those 3 along, but I can't use any of the other cantrips. Whereas with the sorcerer, like I say, I have access to those 3 and every other one, but I can only use 3 of them. Any 3, but only 3. So with this, I don't even have that many spells. I have precisely 2 spells, and I can use one of them a day. One. So usually I try to save, because the magic missile really doesn't do a whole lot of damage at low levels. Like, it's okay. It's not bad. It probably would be helpful in a fight, but not as helpful as sleep. Because sleep is stupidly overpowered. Like, if you're going to play, here's some advice. If you're going to play a magic user in Moldvay Basic, get sleep first. You get 2 spells. You get 2 spells at level 1, and one of them needs to be sleep. I would advise getting sleep and maybe magic missile, some kind of offensive spell. But that's up to you. But get sleep, because sleep is stupidly overpowered. Like, you can run into a group of 16... This is, like, at the high end of this spell's power. You can run into a group of, like, 16 goblins, cast sleep, roll for how many creatures it affects. It's like 2d8. You roll the 2d8, you get a 16. You get 8 and 8, a 16. And then they roll their saving throws. And if none of them make their saving throws, battle's over. It's over. It's over. They're all asleep, and you all just run up with a sword or a dagger, some kind of edged weapon, and you just pop their jugular. That's it. Battle's over. It's stupidly overpowered like that. Now, chances are, you're not going to get that many affected by the spell, and some of those that are affected are going to make their saving throws. But, at the high end of that spell's power, it's really fucking powerful for a level 1 spell. And you're going to want to bring it along, because some of these dungeons are, like, they're not built for low-level characters. Like, unless you're playing the game really smart... Sorry, I'm going to reload my pipe while I'm talking. Unless you're playing the game really smart, you're not going to be living very long. Put it like that. So, like, if you don't know what a green slime is, and there's a green slime in the module that you're playing, you're pretty much fucked. You're all going to die. And then you got to make new characters and start over. But if you play smart like we did, then you'll bring along a flask of oil and some torches, and you'll break a flask of oil on the thing and light it on fucking fire and kill it and get all the experience from it. But here's an idea of the different tiers, like the paladin, cleric. He's going to level up, like, depending what we do, probably, like, next session. Like, I think the cleric levels up at 1,000 XP, something like that, 1,500. The magic user doesn't level up until 2,500 XP. I have to get 2,500 XP to level up. And in 3 sessions, I've got, like, a fifth of what I need to level up. Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot different than the modern D&D bullshit of, well, everybody just has to make it to, like, 1,000 XP to level up. No. You gotta work for your shit. And trust me, it makes sense, because I'm hanging back. I'm not getting involved in fistfights. If I do, they're gonna hit me once, and I'm gonna die. Now, I'm stupidly overpowered with the sleep spell, but that's not 100% effective. It's like a prophylactic. It's not a sure thing. So the guys who are actually running into danger and who are putting their lives on the line should level up faster than me, because I'm not as useful at low levels, because I only have a certain number of spells. Now, if you get the right spells, you can be really fucking useful. But I was talking about how tight the rule setting is and how good it is. You know how in... And I got distracted talking about magic users. You know how in 3.5, you need to know all of the rules for your character. You need to know all of the rules for the magic that you use, all of your armor rules, all of that shit, everything. Usually, if you're playing like 3.5 Pathfinder, you have to read all of the relevant articles on the website or in the player's handbook or the monster manual relevant to your character. And basically have that shit memorized. In Moldvay Basic, I haven't even seen a copy of the rule book. Hand to God. I had swear, hand on a fucking Bible. I'll go get a fucking Bible. Hang on. All right, here we go. This here is my dead mother's Bible. Okay? My right hand on top of it. I have not even seen the cover of the rule book for Moldvay Basic. And I've played 3 sessions in it. The D&D keeps up with it all. The GM keeps up with it all. It's great. It's fucking wonderful, fam. Like, and I'm not saying that I would like to be lazy like that. You know what I mean? I would like to read the rule book just out of sheer academic interest. But I don't have to. I don't have to. And that's amazing. He can keep up with everything. It's all at his fingertips. You know, he's probably got it written down in like a Word document or something like that. But I don't know how Anarchangel does his stuff. But I haven't seen line one of the fucking rulebook. I'm still having, like, tons of fucking fun in this game. So coming from somebody who has played 3.5 and Pathfinder since high school, like, we're talking, like, ninth grade. I don't fucking know what age I was at the time. But, like, ninth grade, I've been playing D&D since then. Always 3.5 Pathfinder. Pathfinder more recently, because that more recent of a thing. The old shit is more fun. I can't do my grand plan of becoming a worm that walks. That was a really cool thing that I wanted to do. I might as well go off on that for a minute. Since I don't have anything else to fucking talk about. Like, there's no political shit happening. Like, oh, Donald Trump fired somebody again. Who fucking cares? He's fine. I'm not worried about Trump. I don't know why fuck Cernovich is. Cernovich lost his goddamn mind. Talk about how Trump's on fucking house arrest and there's a coup in the White House and shit like that. Like, you think this motherfucker was smart enough to go out and do what he did in the primaries and get himself elected? Because that was him. There wasn't a whole lot of strategy meetings that didn't involve Trump. Like, they didn't come to him and tell him what to do. He was like, you know, he would A-B test shit. Very, very subtle, but at the same time, kind of obvious in hindsight. Hard to catch while it's going on, but you can see the pattern emerge as time develops. Apparently there's a coup going on. But I was thinking about it the other day, and I'm going to get back to the worm that walks thing. But I just wanted to make this observation, because this is too long for a tweet, but it's not something that I really wanted to put into a blog post. I don't know, maybe I will. Maybe I need to write more for the blog anyway, so maybe I should take these brain farts that I have and just, like, develop them into a 1,000-word post or something. But for years, I have been hearing comedians and friends of mine, and I've said it. Sorry about that. That wouldn't it be great to have a guy run for president who was just like an average guy who just got up there and said whatever the hell he felt like, but fucking Bill Burr has done this bit for God's sake, but just said whatever the hell he felt like. It just, you know, got up there and spoke his fucking mind, insulted people, you know, like, I'll meet you in the parking lot in 10 minutes, or I'll meet you in the parking lot after the debate or after the rally or something like that. You know, like that kind of guy, just an average fuck you ordinary citizen got up there and ran for president and told the truth and then got elected off of. Wouldn't that be fucking hilarious? That's what we got. Like, I haven't seen anybody make this observation yet, but that's exactly what fucking happened. We had a guy join the Republican Party, get himself to be one of the nominees or one of the candidates for the nomination, and then just literally insult his way into the nomination, and then insult his way into the presidency. It just, like, that shit just blew my mind when I was thinking. I was like, holy shit, like, that stopped me cold for like a minute and a half. And I was like, oh my god, that actually happened. That's, like, this thing that we collectively memed that into existence. Like, that's where this comes from. I'm convinced of it. That's where Donald Trump comes from. We memed him into the office by collectively just kind of wishing for a guy who had his attitude towards everything and got up there and told the fucking truth, or at least his version of the truth, his perception of the truth. And, you know, lo and behold, when we finally get it, half the fucking country loses their goddamn minds and starts rioting in the fucking streets. But anyway. Yeah, the worm that walks thing. I don't know if I've gone over this in the podcast before, but I really like the concept and I've always wanted to build a magic user character up to this level before. You have to be evil to do it, first off. It's an evil creature. It's like a really high level lich. But basically what you do is you get your magic user character to like level 30 or something. It's like a stupidly high level. I've never had a campaign run to where I could get a character up to that level before. And then you perform this ritual wherein you die, like somebody kills you, and then they leave your body out in like an open grave or something like that. And what the ritual does, if it's successful, it summons like maggots and earthworms and just all of these nasty critters, and they come and they devour your corpse, and then your consciousness flows into these little vermin so that they are basically controlled by you. So you're basically a sentient worm colony, And at that point, you're essentially unkillable. Like, total and complete immolation is the only way to kill you at that point. And even that's not a surefire thing. Because if somebody casts a giant fireball at you, and you send, like, one worm down into the earth out of the bottom of your foot, or something like, what, your foot, quote-unquote, out of the bottom of your foot into the earth, and it escapes the fireball, you live. It's going to take you months to reconstitute yourself. You're just going to be like a worm, like gathering other worms to itself and mind controlling them, basically. But that seemed like the coolest shit when I read it in the what was it? I got the handbook over here. I think it's this one. I think it's the Book of Vile Darkness. Let me see here. Prestige classes. I could have sworn it was in this book, because this was most definitely an evil critter. Yeah, this was one of the coolest books, along with the Book of Exalted Deeds. This was one of the coolest things in 3.5. I'll see if I can flip through and find it. Might take a minute. Maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was in the Epic Level Handbook. Damn sure isn't in the basic game, I know that much. Let me see here. Monsters. Worm That Walks. Here we go. It was the Epic Level Handbook. 228. Yeah, here we go. It's got this really kick-ass artwork of this, this basically, like, worm colony in the shape of a man in a robe with a mask on. It looks fucking awesome. But, yeah, A Worm That Walks is the evil memory of an arcane spellcaster whose will and personality have survived the dissolution of his body and transferred themselves to the worms or maggots that devoured the corpse. Hideous to behold, A Worm That Walks is composed of hundreds of worms or maggots that constantly squirm and writhe while somehow holding a vaguely humanoid shape. It typically disguises itself when it leaves its lair, often with a cloak and hood, sometimes accompanied by a mask. Those who have encountered one previously invariably recognize the clay-like, earthy smell that accompanies it. The process of becoming a worm that walks is unpredictable and occurs spontaneously when an evil arcane spellcaster with great force of personality perishes with a head full of prepared or uncast spells. His sentience passes into the blind, mindless worms that gnaw the charnel clay, enabling him to walk again in a new guise. A Worm That Walks rarely speaks, although it retains knowledge of all languages it knew in life, as well as any it has learned since. All vermin of the type that compose its form obey its silent commands without question. So yeah, you can discorporate. This was one of my favorite abilities. It has the discorporate ability. If gravely threatened, a worm can discorporate as a free action, simply falling into a pile of individual vermin that slither away quickly, making their escape by burrowing into the earth, slipping through holes in the wainscoting, or the like. So long as any of the component vermin survive, they can breed and create a new body to house the wizard's intelligence and personality. Discorporating is a dangerous tactic because once separated, the vermin are treated no differently than other vermin. Also, the worm stands a good chance of losing all its equipment. However, discorporation almost assures that at least one maggot, if not dozens, will manage to crawl away, and so provide for the worm's continued existence. So yeah, if one worm gets away, you live. And that seemed like the absolute coolest shit to me. I just, like, that was fucking awesome. Shit, I forgot to get the sponsor roll up. Hang on, I better do that. Go ahead and go through the first round of sponsors. I'm sorry, I'm fucking scatterbrained. Today doesn't feel real anymore. Fuck all of this. Okay, so if you enjoy what I do here and you want to help support me, there are a couple of ways that you can do that. I now have a Patreon account. Not Patreon. Patreon, Hatreon. And what the Patreon is basically if you donate some money, you'll get free audiobooks. Like, that's what I'm doing that with. The podcast is always going to be free. All of the blog posts and shit, they're all going to be free. I'm not putting anything behind a paywall, except for the things that I actually put actual real work into. Like, I very rarely have to re-record something that I say on the podcast because I flubbed it so goddamn badly. But no, basically what I'm doing is I'm taking public domain pulp stories and I'm recording them in audio and I'm converting them into a bunch of different ebook files. Like, I've got EPUB, MOBI, PDF, AZW3, and text, rich text, and a Word document. And it's nothing special. It's just like a cover mock-up. Christopher Warren did the background, and I just put the text over it. It's just a cover mock-up, and then the text of the story. It's nothing special, so if you want to have it on your Kindle or you want to read along, that's fine. But the big thing is the audio here. Like, the mock-ups took, the ebook mock-ups took, like, I don't know, like an hour or two to make for two of them. And that was when I was just figuring it out. So the process is going to be heavily streamlined in the future. I've basically got it down. Like I say, it's not going to be anything fancy with the ebooks, but the audiobooks are going to be like actual audiobook quality. And if you're interested in that, then we can work out all kinds of different things for the people who are actually, you know, actually donating to get cool shit. This time I'm going with a couple of old horror stories that I'm not going to give out the names of right now, but they're very good and I enjoy them very much. They are old, as most of this stuff will be. But if that sounds like something that you're interested in, basically the way I'm going to run it is if you sign up for the Patreon and the payment goes through, I'm going to send you a link to an email chain, an email service, like a MailChimp thing. And then when that goes through, when I make sure that all of the payments are processed, everybody that actually sent a payment and didn't just like say that they were going to and then withdraw it at the last minute is going to get an email with a link to a file hosting site where they can download as many of the ebooks as they like and the audio files, which I'll try and put up in MP3 and WAVE, depending on which one you like. And that'll be about two stories a month. And if it's like a bigger one, like I've seen some stories that are like 46 pages long, or like a Robert E. Howard story, like one of the old Conan stories or something like that. His stuff could get kind of long. Like they had like six chapters because it was a serial in the magazines. So that would be just one thing, because it would be like this fucking hour long, you know, or 2 hour long production. But I'm also doing this as a way to revitalize the Bandcamp. So I'll send these out to patrons first, and then like a month later, I'll put them up on the Bandcamp and people can go and buy them for a nominal fee. I'm not going to be charging that much. So if that sounds like something that you're interested in, you follow the link in the show notes, the description, and check that out. And I would be very appreciative to anybody who took me up on that one. But if that's not exactly your speed, we have other options. We have the Cat Kimbridge audiobooks. I did 6, 7, and 8 in the series. They're all linked in the store page in the right-hand side of my blog. They are good superversive military science fiction. There's good comedy. There's really good action. There's a little bit of romance. Not a whole lot. But God is taken as red as existing in this universe, and it's very refreshing to see somebody who treats kind of the church with the respect that it deserves in a sci-fi setting. You know, to have a like, normally when you get a sci-fi setting, it's like, oh, God is whatever, you know. It's not really that big of a deal. Oh, you still believe in God? Like in Mass Effect, the Christian character in that game was kind of a bigot and kind of there to be made fun of. Like, they let her represent herself okay, but at the same time, it was like, you know, this character is obviously here to, like, when you get deeper into her personality, you're probably not meant to like her very much. And that doesn't happen with the characters in the, like, one of the main characters in the story is a priest. And he's very fun. I like that character a lot. So it was like reading Canticle for Leibowitz or something like that. Not quite as advanced as Canticle, but it's still really good. So if that sounds like something that you're interested in, go check those out. Next, we have the Dimension Bucket Media audiobooks. Or not, they're not an audio yet. We're working on it. We've got like a million fucking projects going on right now. Shit got busy fast. But we have Hell's 5-Minute Tales of Horror, which is a collection of microfiction by Hell Richards. It's all very spooky stuff, and this is an ebook. So if you're interested in getting a free review copy of this, and you actually want to write a review on it, then get in touch with me via the contact form on the side of the blog, and I will send it to you, and you can read it. Just like I say, write the review, please. That's all I ask, you know. I'm not asking for money or anything like that, but if you get one of these, if you come to me and ask me for one, and I send it to you, then please write the review. Even if it's just an Amazon review, that helps. Better if you have like a website or a YouTube channel or something to get eyes on it, because that's the point of giving out free review copies. But if it's just an Amazon review, I'll take that too. I'm not picky. And if you don't have the ability to put it out there and get eyes on it, then that's fine. Next, we have Dimension of Cobwebs. Dimension of Cobwebs is a collection of weird fiction by Grandmasters of the Craft. And actually, I recently just got the PDF. He's working on the EPUB for it, but all I have right now is the PDF. So I can actually tell you who all we have in this collection here. So we have Bram Stoker, Edgar Allan Poe, Frank Belknap Long, Hans Heinz Urs, H.G. Wells, and H.P. Lovecraft. And I don't know if you know who Frank Belknap Long or Hans Heinz Urs is. I'm still not sure who Urs is. I'm pretty sure I've read his story in here, but I'm not really as familiar with the guy's work as I should be. Okay. Yeah, and these are some of their lesser-known stories, or maybe less popular stories, like the H.P. Lovecraft story. I thought it was, there's actually two Lovecraft stories in here, which are very good ones. Some of his best, in my opinion. It's actually got the first H.P. Lovecraft story I ever read, which is Rats in the Walls. Very good one, but it's got, like, The Judge's House, The Sea Raiders, The Spider. Very, very good stuff. So go and check that out, and like I say, we're working on an ebook copy of that. Next up, we have Darkest of Dreams. This is another one that I actually do have a proper ebook copy of, and I can send it to you in pretty much whatever format you want. And it is a collection of basically horror stories that also have a sprinkling of science fiction and fantasy throughout them by the Dimension Bucket Media crew. And I've started reading this when I can find time to read. I still gotta read that Howie K. Bentley story, which I'm enjoying, by the way. But Darkest of Dreams is a collection of horror stories by the Dimension Bucket Media crew. So that's me, Christopher Warren, Connor Goff, and William Harmer, a.k.a. JimFear138, Dimension Bucket, Nightshade, and Gentleman Walrus, if any of you are more familiar with our online personas. And I've gotten past like two, maybe three stories in here that aren't mine, and I'm very impressed with the quality. Like I said, I haven't been able to read this yet because I haven't had it. But I have been, like, steadily working my way through it, and I'm really enjoying it so far. I really like these guys' writing anyway, but I didn't know how good William was until I started reading this book. But, go check that out, guys. It's really fucking good. And like I say, if you want a ebook copy of it, you can get in contact with me for review. Once again, for review. We would appreciate a review if you get a free copy. Don't just, like, get the copy and skate. That would be a dick move. But yeah, next we have A Man Upstairs, which is another one that I have an ebook copy of, so if you want to review it, get in touch. But it's a collection of creepy verse by Christopher Warren, so it's like dark poetry, horror poetry kind of thing. And the odd thing is that he's not a poet. You know, he doesn't consider himself a poet. He just wrote a little collection of poetry, and it's actually really good. Like I say, I've been steadily working my way through this one as well. Whenever I have time to read. And I've been really enjoying it. It's easier to take in because it's really short snippets, so I can, like, read a couple of poems and then, you know, go do some work and then read a couple more and go read something else and then, you know, do some more work and stuff like that. Next up, we have Cracked. Cracked is not an ebook yet. Once again, we're working on it, but it is the story of a man who has discovered a horrible secret behind reality, and reality starts fracturing around him, and he's trying to find out what the fuck's going on. And it's by Connor Goff, and Connor has a very interesting ability to present madness in a horror story that I wish I had. So, he's a very good writer. I can't imagine that this book is any less quality than his previous works, so go and check that out. Once again, all of this is linked on my website. So next we have Phoenix on the Sword, which is the first published Conan story by Robert E. Howard. It's the original OG in the Conan canon. And Conan is king of Aquilonia, and there is a plot to assassinate and depose him, put a puppet on the throne, and basically fuck the country to hell. And there's also a subplot in the story about a Stygian wizard who has become a slave because he lost his ring of power. And he gets it back, and he sends this baboon demon to go and fight Conan, and it's just, it's awesome. It kicks so much ass. Like, if you're ever wondering, like, why do I talk about Robert E. Howard like he's the second coming of Jesus, go and read this book. Like, I've been listening to some Robert E. Howard stories. I have a collection of his horror stories. And, like, my goal at this point is not to become, I don't know, like, I don't want to write the great American novel or anything like that. I want to be the second coming of Robert E. Howard. I want to write stories that are that level of fun. Like, that's my goal right there. If I can get to where Robert E. Howard was in terms of story writing capacity, then I'll be fucking happy. I will consider my dream accomplished. He's swiftly becoming my absolute favorite author of all time. Period. Of all time. So go and check out Phoenix on the Sword and become a believer just like me. And that's about it for the first round of sponsors. So let's see, what the fuck else can we talk about? There was something else that I wanted to go over. I swear to God, I do not remember what it was. God damn it. Well, fuck it. Let's do that Breitbart article. I still have that one open. So this is once again from Breitbart by John Binder. Not familiar with his work, but... the title of the article is Zuckerberg Group, 700K American Job Openings If DACA Ends. So, as I said earlier, a study by Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg's Open Borders organization revealed that if an Obama-created amnesty program for young illegal aliens is ended, it would open nearly 700,000 American jobs. That's very important to remember in this. These people are not citizens, okay? These aren't anchor babies. These aren't people who were born on American soil. These are people who came over here as children, right? Like, they were already, like, 6, 7, 8 when they came over here. Something like that. And basically, what this does is gives them temporary amnesty, which is stupid. It's really fucking stupid. Like, their parents should have been more responsible than this. They should have actually entered the country legally and gotten them a green card, and then I wouldn't fucking care. See, that's the thing, is that I really don't, I'm so sick of the fucking, like, I've started unfollowing people on Gab, mostly to clean up my feed, because there's a lot of shit going on in my Gab feed that I just do not fucking care about. Like, I want to get on Gab and be able to do what I do on Twitter. You know, I want to talk with Alexander and Daddy Warpig and, you know, Dean and Oum and Hook. Hook Ott is on Gab. He moved over to Gab months ago. I haven't talked to that motherfucker in since he's moved over to fucking Gab. And I go on Gab and I never see any fucking any fucking Gabs from him. I never see any their version of tweets. I never see any posts from him. So what I'm doing is, like, when I moved over to Gab, it was a really small user base, and I just, like, followed everybody. Like, I did the follow back thing for, like, 3 months. And there's a lot of people posting a lot of shit in my feed that I just do not fucking care about. So if I see your ass in my feed posting a bunch of shit that I don't care about, I'm gonna unfollow you. Like, that's just how it is. And another thing I'm doing is I'm unfollowing the fucking white identitarians. Like, I'm sick of it. I'm just fucking sick of it. I do not care about white solidarity. I do not care about the white race. I just, like, yeah, it would be sad if white people fucking disappeared, just like I think it would be sad if Japanese people disappeared, because the culture is interesting, it's cool, it's awesome, they have great contributions to humanity and shit like that. But ultimately, like, to put this in perspective, 99% of every species that has ever existed on the planet is dead. Extinct. Gone. Forever. Is not coming back. And that's not even talking about, like, differentiations in species. Like, dogs are all of the same species, but there's different breeds of dogs, I guess. And the same is kind of true, this is a bad analogy, but the same is kind of true of humans. Like, you can interbreed a corgi and a German mastiff, just like you can interbreed a Japanese person and someone from Zimbabwe. And talking about this in such clinical terms is horrible. I don't like doing it. It gives me the ickies. But looking at it like that, it like the human race is going to survive one way or the other. Like, I will admit that white people are, like, they're not the most technologically advanced, but they probably have a better chance of getting into space and colonizing stuff than just about anyone else. Because the Japanese are going to be they're going to be extinct in like 200 years. They're just going to be gone. No more Japanese people. Unless they fix their fucking fertility rates. Or like Chinese people. They're not exactly concerned with space travel. You know, they're more concerned with maintaining a tight grip over their people than, you know, getting humanity off of this rock before we all die. And when I talk about these countries, I'm talking about them in the macro sense. I know that there are white there are non-whites in majority white countries that are, you know, working towards that same goal, which is why I've kind of just broken it down into white and, you know, other racial ethnic groups, because that's the majority in those countries. You know, like, Africa is majority black, not a whole lot of space travel going on in Africa. Not really. Even with the white people, like the Suidlanders, it's like spelled Swede, like S-U-I-D-E, Landers, but I think it's pronounced Suidlanders. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm not that familiar with South Africa, but, like, those are white people that are currently undergoing a genocide. They're not exactly all that concerned with the survival of the human race. They kind of have their own shit to worry about, which, hey, fair enough. But in like, America, we don't really have, like, genocides going on and shit right now. So somebody, like, from India, who's very intelligent and into, like, astrophysics and, you know, engineering and stuff like that, can come to America and then work on, like, space travel stuff and get us, like, off Earth, which is my main concern. Like, I don't care which race survives what. I just want enough humans out there to keep the species going. That's it. That's the goal. So the white identitarian thing, like, yeah, it's really, really fucked up that these people aren't even hiding it anymore. And, like, I don't necessarily disagree with these guys. You know, like, when I see articles from, like, Affinity Mag or some shit like that, or whoever, or Salon. Salon was the most recent one, I think, talking about how, you know, basically we have to end white people. And I'll guarantee you, I know exactly how they fucking did this. They put up the most inflammatory fucking headline they could. And the idea is, sight unseen, tell me if I'm wrong, the idea is to end the concept of white people. Because that's not a concept outside of America. It really isn't. Like, you go to Europe, and there's no, like, white people. It's like, you're German, you're Polish, you're Czech, you're, you know, you're Romanian, you're British, you're Scottish, you're Irish. You know, there's no, like, collective white race over it. Like, America's ideas of race are really fucked up. Because we have the melting pot where, you know, you have all of these groups that come over here, and then they just kind of glom onto each other, and they lose their shared cultural identity, their previous cultural identity in the melting pot that is America. And then they kind of just, they only have the most surface level things to kind of bond about or to rally around. So that's why you see a lot of people in the African American community or the Black American community calling themselves Black and, you know, like the Kangs and shit like that. You get these people because they don't have this shared cultural heritage that's tied to their ethnicity. Then you get people like me, who I'm like an American identitarian. Like, are you an American? Cool. Don't care. No, stop there. Stop there. False. Hold on. Stop. You're an American. It's all that matters to me. I don't care where you come from. I don't even really care what you're doing. You're an American. That's it. You went through the process. You got your green card or your papers or whatever. Good. You're an American. Cool. Fuck it. I don't care. You know, I'm not necessarily worried about America becoming a non-white majority country in the future. It just doesn't bother me. And to see all these people primarily on Gab talking about this shit and reposting all of this stuff, it's just like, guys, you're killing me. You're fucking killing me here. Like, don't get me wrong. I understand why, okay? I perfectly understand why, and I can completely 100% explain why if you give me, like, 3 hours. I could do it. But just because I understand doesn't mean I fucking care. So it's no offense to these guys. I'm not mad at them or anything. I'm not, like, going over to the other side with the SJWs and the white genocide people. No, I still call that bullshit out when I see it. Like, Affinity Mag posted something about white people need to go extinct, and I went and looked up the demographics for the U.S., and in, like, 2016, white people, like, European-descended people, are, like, 73.6% of the population of America? So, according to the Wikipedia article that I read, that might have been wrong, but, I mean, they linked to the Census Bureau, so I'm assuming that it's right. But, yeah, like, 76, 73.6? Keep talking shit. keep talking shit and see where that lands you.
And that's for their own good.
That's for their own good. The reason that you have the alt-right right now doing this white identitarian bullshit, and let's not even pretend that it's not, like, I don't mind some alt-right people. Okay, I'm friends with some of them, and I watch Vox Day's dark streams on Periscope and stuff like that. I enjoy Vox Day. He's a very intelligent guy. He's got a lot of insightfulness about him, and I find it very hard to disagree with him because I simply don't know as much as the guy does. I partially blame this on brain damage from seizures and all the pot I smoked when I was young. But where was I? Yeah. See, brain damage. I'm not as smart as he is. So I really don't, like, unless I know he's wrong, I don't really. Okay, Vox. Okay. I'll take your word for it for right now, but I'm not taking you as gospel. You know, which is the type of attitude that you should take to everybody that you fucking listen to. Nobody's word you should take as gospel. Nobody. Okay? That's part of the fucking problem that we're having here. Like, part of the problem with my tweet is that I didn't read this article before I reposted it. You should always read the fucking article. Okay? I get caught up in this too. You know, I don't necessarily have time to read every single fucking 4,000 word article that blindly makes its way across my fucking timeline. I understand. But we can all try to be a little bit better about this. Starting with me. So I apologize to the people that I'm unfollowing on Gab. It's nothing against you personally. I just don't care about what you're talking about. And you care about it. That's cool. That's good. Go care about it. You know, I'm not begrudging you caring about it. This is self-maintenance. Kind of like, okay, here's a way that I can explain it really, really simply. On Tumblr, all right, I have a Tumblr. You can find it in my social media tab on my website. I have a Tumblr. I enjoy using Tumblr, mostly for porn, but I am exposed to a vast amount of shit that I just do not fucking care about. Like, I actively dislike Game of Thrones, Marvel, and DC, right? Okay, so this is pop culture shit. I don't like seeing posts on Tumblr about Marvel and DC, right? Okay, so there is an extension, a browser extension that you can install specifically built for Tumblr called XKit. And XKit allows you to install widgets into your Tumblr dashboard that kind of control how things work. So there's an easy reblogger, so you just, it's like a one button click thing, like I just hover my mouse over the thing, click reblog, boom, it goes straight to my Tumblr profile. There's stuff that gets rid of ads, there's stuff that lets you download tracks from the Tumblr music player that people have uploaded to Tumblr. And there's another one called the Blacklist. And what the Blacklist is the Blacklist lets you put certain words and phrases into it, and every time you load your dashboard page, it will filter out those, it closes them. Like, it puts them in this little gray box, and you can click to see it if you really want to. But it's based off of the parameters that you entered into the Blacklist. So if I decide that I want to put Daenerys from Game of Thrones, that name, into my Blacklist, I will never have to see another post featuring that name in either the tags or the text of the post. So I'm not going and fucking with those people and being like, hey, you know, I follow you and you shouldn't post as much Game of Thrones because I don't like it. No, I'm glad that they like Game of Thrones. I don't. So I'm taking personal steps on my end to make sure that I don't see any Game of Thrones bullshit. Same thing with Gab. Unfortunately, there's not an XKit extension for Gab. So I'm forced to unfollow all of these people who are constantly talking about shit that I don't care about. And that's just what it is. You know, it's nothing against them personally. I wish them well in whatever endeavors they have going on. I don't care, and I'm tired of seeing it, so I'm just unfollowing people. I have no idea how I got off on this fucking tangent right now. No clue. This is gonna be like the Ramblecast 3.0. But yeah, if you find out that I unfollowed you on Gab like I was previously following you and I'm not anymore, it's because you're posting a bunch of shit that I don't care about, and you're cluttering up my feed with shit that I just don't want to see. It's a waste of my time. I'm not saying that it's a waste of your time or that you're a bad person for posting it. I just don't want to see it. And because there's no extension for Gab like XKit, I can't blacklist all of this shit. And I don't want to mute people or block people, because that's rude. It also makes you a faggot. Like, the only time that I actively block people, like, there was this bitch. There is this bitch on Twitter the other day. And I don't block humans. It takes some special shit for you to get blocked by me. Usually by putting advertisements on my timeline on mobile. My block list is huge, and it's all corporate accounts. Like, I can't count all of the fucking... I wish I could see my block list. I don't even know how to do it. But I will mute people if I don't care about what they're talking about or if they're a fucking troll. Like, there was this bitch that was going through, like, the MGTOW.com account and DDJ, Misandry Today. He's got the Feminist Lie is his avatar. He wrote that book. It's a very good book, by the way. But they were... them and a couple other people were talking about... fuck, I don't even remember. But it was some MGTOW-related thing, and I read through the thread. And this woman, this, like, 48-year-old woman or something like that, had jumped in and was just, like, non sequitur after non sequitur after troll post after troll post. And I'm sat here like, why are you guys interacting with this person? Why? What the fuck? Like, why are you taking the bait? What the fuck is wrong? Are you bored? Is that it? Are you bored? Because you're not going to get a fruitful discussion out of this. So I made a couple of posts making fun of her. She was tagged in it, whatever, I don't care. And I woke up the next day and she had, like, responded to me personally, like, 5 or 8 times. But the most of it was in that conversation, which, hey, fine, whatever, it's that conversation, I don't really care. You'll get bored eventually and go away. But the line that I drew was when she started scrolling my feed specifically. And she found a post where I was talking about how trans people don't belong in the military because of fitness, like mental fitness. And I mentioned that I would get kicked out of the military for my constant depression and alcoholism. And she was like, you know, oh, no surprise there. And I'm like, all right. Troll. This is a troll. You know, so this is a troll. So peace. Have fun. You know, I'm just not going to listen to you anymore. Mute. And I muted him. And that's the beautiful thing about Twitter, is that you can do that. It can be all 100%. Like, they don't need a trust and safety council. They don't need any of this bullshit, this totalitarian bullshit they've been coming down with. All they need to do is have the block and the mute functions, and they've already got that. And then whenever somebody is like, hey, this person is abusing me, tell them to block them. You can do that. If you're like Ben Shapiro and somebody is just constantly sending you fucking Jews in the oven memes, block them. Or even better, muting them is even more insidious because they don't realize that you're not seeing their shit anymore. So they're still posting at you thinking that you're seeing it, but you're not. It scrubs it out of your notifications feed, but you didn't block them. And that's way more fun, because you know that they're going to go and waste their fucking energy on you when you don't care anymore. So that's what I do. If somebody, an actual human, just pisses me off, or they're a troll or something like that, I just mute them. I'm not interested in talking to you. I don't want to see you in my fucking feed. Go away. And it's like Vox Day does, like people come in and start talking off topic or talking shit or troll posting in his periscopes, and he just blocks them. Like, boom. Gone. Done. He's actually accidentally blocked the wrong person a couple of times because the chat's going by so fast and he didn't have time to grab the right one. But yeah, this is user end. I'm taking care of the problem of cleaning up my own feed. I'm not going to these people and saying, hey, you know, this thing that you care about, could you stop posting about it? Because it's getting really boring to see on my end and I'm tired of it. I'm not going to them and doing that. I'm just saying, all right, well, you go and do your own thing. If you ever want to get in touch, I'm over here. You know, no animosity, nothing like that. I'm just going to unfollow you because I don't care about what you're posting about. Nothing personal, guys. But we have gotten so far fucking afield from this bullshit. So Zuckerberg's FWD.US group, a pro-immigration lobbying group, released the study with the intention to show the hardships of ending the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, DACA, program. Or the DREAM Act. I think it's the DREAM Act. Where more than 850,000 young illegal aliens have been given temporary amnesty, would have on the American economy. So the hardships, they were trying to show the hardships of ending DACA, the hardships that the American economy would go through by ending DACA, which is like They're illegal. They're inherently a fucking drain on the system. All they're doing, like, it has to be welfare. Like, they got temporary amnesty. They're not. And these are young people. These are like high school and below. Childhood arrivals, right? Like, they're not contributing to GDP. They're inherently a drain on the fucking system that we can't afford. I feel like I need to put that in there. We cannot fucking afford this. Our country is trillions of dollars in the red. Multiple trillions. We're at like 20 trillion or something like that in the red. We can't afford to take care of 850,000 young illegal aliens on the taxpayers' backs. We can't fucking afford it anymore. We just can't. Like, this is part of the shit that is contributing to the collapse of our economy. We cannot fucking afford it. We have to stop this and get rid of them. They have to go back. The study unintentionally revealed how many more job opportunities American workers would have if President Trump were to repeal DACA, as he promised his supporters he would do. According to the FWD, I'm just going to call it Forward.us study, if DACA is repealed, it would mean potentially 700,000 American jobs could open up for American citizens. Potentially. That's important. That's a weasel word. Potentially is a weasel word. I understand that stuff like this is very hard to estimate, but potentially 700,000 could mean anywhere from 700,000 to 2. But if it goes as well as it's projected that it will, that would be a huge boost to the American economy and cut our unemployment levels significantly. Which, unemployment isn't really actually what you want to be looking at. You want to look at workforce participation rates. Because technically children are unemployed, and elderly people who have gone through retirement, they're technically unemployed too. So you want to look at workforce participation rate, which takes like the amount of people in the proper age ranges, which is like 18 to 65, and seeing whether or not they are actually engaged in the workforce. And if that rate goes up, that's a problem. Or no, if that rate goes down, that's a problem. The more people that you have working from that age range, the better, essentially. I'm sorry, I'm still tripping out. Everything seems really surreal, especially with the lighting in this room right now, and the beer, and like all the shit that happened while I was asleep. I feel like I woke up in a different universe, like a whole other shit. Like, we had the Berenstain was the original, then it forked into Berenstain, and now I think I've personally forked off into some fucking nowhere land. Hopefully this is a nowhere land where Dimension Bucket Media will actually be successful. That would be nice, because I'm busting my ass on that shit. But anyway, the study claims that on average, if Trump were to repeal DACA, 30,000 American job opportunities would open up each month. Forward.us President Todd Schulte touted the... It looks like Schulte. S-C-H-U-L-T-E. Schulte. I'll call him Schulte. Touted the results of the study as a loss for America's business community, saying it would have severe consequences on the economy. Quote, eliminating DACA would have immediate and severe consequences for not only the 800,000 dreamers enrolled in the program, but for the millions of Americans who live, work, and study with these young people every single day. Schulte said in a statement, I'm failing to see how. Maybe we can go read a statement. Immigration hawks have long argued the booming illegal alien population, estimated between 12 to 30 million. Million? That's a lot of people. It's a lot of people who are a drain on the economy because they're not paying taxes because they're illegal. This is simple. There's really, really fucking simple leaps of logic here. And high levels of legal immigration, where the U.S. admits more than 1 million a year, contribute to the displacement of American workers and wage stagnation, which is true. Which is true. These people are a factor in wage stagnation. Sorry to say, but the open borders lobby and corporate interests teamed up over the last few months to defend DACA and demand the Trump administration keep the program going. A legal threat by a number of state attorneys general, including Texas's Ken Paxton, fuck you, could potentially force... Oh, wait. Could potentially force the Trump administration to end the program or decline to defend the program in court. Okay, sorry. I apologize to Ken Paxton. I thought that he was one of those fucking Paul Ryan people. Fuck you, Paul Ryan. By the way, if you ever hear this, fuck you. Go home. Nobody likes you. Fucking Democrat. Under DACA, young illegal aliens are given permits to work in the U.S. despite their immigration status. In President Obama's last months in office, he scrambled to give out more than 120,000 permissions, Breitbart Texas reported. And that is the end of that. So let's check this statement out. I have a meeting with Christopher Warren tonight. Like, I'm actually... I got like 20 minutes. It ain't that long. So, it's fwd.us, and Center for American Progress. Browning Machine. Hey! The progressives are at it again. I regret to inform everybody that the progressives are at it again. Why is it the progressives always say they want to be progressive? But everything that they do is meant to, like, shit things up and slow down actual progression. It was like Sargon said this in a stream with JonTron a while back. He was like, you know, I thought I was a progressive until I looked up what a progressive actually was. And then I was like, oh, shit. Sorry, I've been watching some Aiden Paladin videos. She's awesome, by the way. You should go look up her channel. She's very entertaining. Obviously a shit poster from like Pole or something. Spent a lot of time on 4chan, but also like ridiculously high IQ and a social scientist. So she actually accurately explains how social science should function and how it can actually be considered a legitimate science. But there's a lot of people shitting up social science right now. Anyway, so Forward.us and Center for American Progress introduced report on DACA impact on jobs, dreamers, and U.S. economy. So Washington, D.C., Forward.us, I'm just going to call them Forward from now on, and the Center for American Progress, CAP, today released a report, The Impact of Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, Program Repeal on Jobs, outlining the enormous job losses and far-reaching economic consequences that a repeal of DACA would bring about across the U.S. With DACA facing the imminent threat of repeal, today's report has brought to light the dramatic consequences to U.S. employers if DACA is repealed and renewals are put on hold, even for a brief period of time. New data outlined in the report details the chronological job loss consequences of repealing DACA, resulting in the potential for an average of 30,000 DACA recipients to lose their jobs each month. Well, okay, hold on, stop you there. So, if I understand DACA properly, that is a program for young, illegal immigrants. They shouldn't be here in the first place. They should not have those jobs. Those jobs should be going to actual American citizens. Whatever their skin color, I don't fucking care. But they should be going to actual American citizens. As such, these illegals, who, if you look into the fucking research, send a dramatic amount of remittances. That's the word, right? Remittances? I'm sorry, it's been nothing but, you know, this stupid fucking Ann Coulter bullshit and Billy Joel's Scenes from an Italian Restaurant in the back of my fucking mind for the past 3 hours. Okay, yeah, I was right. A remittance is a transfer of money by a foreign worker to an individual in his or her home country. Yes, it is remittances, was the word I was looking for. So, basically what's happening is these people are getting these jobs that should rightfully be held by U.S. citizens, and the money that these U.S. citizens should be getting paid would be going back into the American economy and bolstering it. And it's not. They are sending a fair portion of this money back. Like, they take what they need to live, and then they send the rest to their family in fucking Mexico or wherever. You know, they pay their bills, and then they send the rest of the money to Mexico. That is a leak in the economy. A bad leak. There's another thing that I wanted to fucking get to, by the way, just on this whole economics bullshit. But, yeah, this is, like, exactly, like, we don't really have to go any further here, do we? Like, 30,000 of these people are going to lose their jobs each month, and that's going to mean that more jobs are going to be open for actual American citizens, and then that money is going to be spent in America and not sent to Mexico, and that's going to plug up a huge hole in our fucking economy that's been leaking like a sieve since DACA was enacted. Since before DACA was enacted. This is like guest worker programs and shit like that. The people who come over here from Mexico that don't really have any intention of bringing their families across and becoming citizens and contributing to U.S. GDP, They do the exact same thing. I took a fucking like 500 level class on this back when I was in college. And yeah, this is a fucking problem here. Like, that's a lot of people sending a lot of money across the fucking border in remittances that is never going to come back into the U.S. economy. Like, it's a hole, and it's just siphoning money. For every business day that DACA renewals are put on hold, an average income of more than 1,400 individuals can be fired. Average of more than 1,400 individuals can be fired from their jobs. So? Fuck these people. They should have come over here legally. They shouldn't have come over here illegally. They should have obeyed the fucking law in the first place. They should never have gotten amnesty. Immigration laws are in place in countries for a reason. And because DACA recipients live in all 50 states and the District of Columbia, the economic consequences will be felt all across the country. Yeah, I imagine it will. I imagine that you know, a lot of these people are going to be told that they're going to get sent back to fucking Mexico, and their bosses are going to be like, well, sorry, you know, but I have to hire this guy down the street. You know, I have to hire Jamal or Dave or, you know, Manuel, who's actually a fucking U.S. citizen who got his green card and came over here legally. And he contributes to GDP, goddammit. And I'll have to hire them. I'll guarantee you that most of this is low-skilled labor, too. Most of this shit, I'll almost guarantee you, I dare somebody to prove me wrong, definitively prove me wrong, that most of this is unskilled labor that is meant to be filled by high school students. It's meant to be entry-level fucking positions, like people's first jobs and shit. So essentially what you're saying is that when people get out of high school and they're not able to find jobs, they're not able to find their first job because the job market is so goddamn bad, and they just go to college to get away from reality for fucking 4 to 6 years. Fuck you, by the way. I went and worked before I went to college, goddammit. Those jobs are now going to be open for these people to get these entry-level positions and then start their careers. Or at least build up a resume. Which is inherently better for the U.S. economy than letting fucking illegals come over here. And I don't care, they could be Polish illegals for all I care. I rather like Poland. I rather like the Poles. But if they're over here illegally, then fuck them. And that's going to open up these jobs for Americans to take them and start contributing to the economy again. Like Trump said that he was going to get our economy up to like 3.0% growth. It was like under 2 in Obama, which not only is that not good growth, it's not sustainable. You see, I know if I run my mouth for long enough, I would find something that pissed me off and I could just go off on it for 45 minutes. But this is a good thing. This is, like, I'm really failing to see how this is any kind of bad thing. Like, oh, these companies are going to be shit out of work. Like, 1,400 people a day are going to be fired from their jobs, and then they're going to have to hire Americans. Boo fucking who. Go get a green card. This data further shows that job loss resulting directly from the repeal of DACA will begin immediately and will continue over the course of the next 2 years until all employed DACA recipients, nearly 700,000 individuals, are removed from the workforce and all of nearly 800,000 total recipients are subject to deportation. Good! Sorry, I didn't mean to bust your fucking eardrums, RIP headphone users. But yeah, I was talking about, like, Trump's got it up to, like, 2.7% in his first 8 months. Like, we went from what was the average economic growth under Obama? Average economic growth under Obama. Thank you, DuckDuckGo. CNS News? It says 1% annual economic growth under Obama. Yet not sustainable. Okay, it says, in the decade from 1981 to 1990, according to the BEA, average annual growth in real gross domestic product, GDP, was 3.36%. In the decade from 1991 to 2000, average annual growth in real GDP was 3.45%. In the 20 years from 1981 to 2000, average annual growth in real GDP was 3.405%. By contrast, in the decade from 2001 to 2010, average annual growth in real GDP was only 1.67%. Not sustainable! And so far, in the 21st century, from 2001 through 2012, average annual growth in real GDP has been only 1.775%. During just the years that Barack Obama has been in office, 2009 through 2012, when was this published? This was published in 2013. So this is old. But average annual growth in real GDP has only been 1.075%. Not sustainable. Not sustainable. Like, that's not how an economy is supposed to function. Like, 3, 4, that's really good. That's a really good number. That means that your economy is actually growing. Like, anything below 2.5, you need to change some shit. You need to look hard at your fucking policies and find out what's affecting the economy like that and get the fuck rid of it. And Trump is already up to, like, what, 2.7? In his first 8 months? Fuck all these people. All these doubters and shit. All these naysayers. Oh, Trump's gonna ruin the U.S. economy. Yeah, he's really fucking ruining it. We're on the track to having better numbers than fucking Reagan under Trump. And these people are crying about it. Which really, really makes you wonder about their motivations. Doesn't it? Because it doesn't take a genius. I'm most certainly not a fucking genius, right? But I can look at all of this economic data, and I can look at trends in how economies function and patterns in how they develop over the years. And I can look at what is considered by economists to be good growth and what's considered to be low performance growth. And I can figure out whether or not Trump is doing a good thing and whether or not the American economy is getting better under him. And it is. It is. It's getting better under Trump. So, if these people are against the American economy getting better, what else are they against? And more importantly, why are they against that? So it really, really, really fucking percolates those pistachios, doesn't it? Really makes you think. I'm fucking done with leftists, guys. I'm fucking done with these people. Like, it's not even disguised anymore. I don't care about identity politics and shit like that. I care about fucking America. America is the single greatest country in the history of humankind. And in 200 years, we went from upstart nation taking on the greatest empire in the world to economic powerhouse that has kept the world economy floating for the better part of a century, by themselves, by the way, to the fall of fucking Rome. And shit like this, repealing DACA is going to fix that. I mean, well, it's not going to fix it, okay? The crash is coming. The crash is absolutely coming. Like, very, very happy with what Trump is doing here with DACA. Get rid of Social Security. Now! Fuck the old people. Fuck my dad's generation. Like, I love my father. I love my father. Don't get me wrong. Fuck that generation. They were warned. Fucking Reagan came out. There is video. You can find it on YouTube of Reagan saying that this shit is basically a fucking Ponzi scheme. And it will ruin the American economy. They were warned. They were warned 40 fucking years ago. And they did nothing about it. Because no generation wants to be the one holding the bags. They would rather crash the country into a fucking cliff than be the generation caught holding the bags and not getting their money. I want my money. Well, your money isn't fucking there anymore, guys. It's not. Okay? The money that you pay in Social Security right now does not go into some giant trust fund with which they divvy out to people who are collecting Social Security. You know where it goes? It goes from your paycheck to government agencies to Social Security collectors. There is no fund. It's gone. Your money is gone. You were robbed. You were stolen from. Get over it. Pull the fucking Band-Aid off. I was robbed too, and as you can tell, I'm pissed off about it. But getting rid of Social Security will help. It will seriously help, but nobody wants to touch that. That's the fucking third rail of fucking politics. Nobody wants to touch Social Security, because God forbid they be the one responsible for actually fixing shit. This is the problem, the difference that I've seen with a lot of, like, actual conservative philosophy and policy versus liberal philosophy and policy. Liberals want to help. They really want to help, and I understand that, and that's noble of you. But the thing is that they want to help in unsustainable ways that are eventually going to cause everybody to crash. Meanwhile, conservatives want people... It's the difference between giving a man a fish and teaching him to fish. Liberals, generally, This is general. I'm speaking in generalities here. So if you can't handle somebody speaking in generalities, then you might want to stop listening to the podcast. So I do it a lot. But generally, liberals want to give people fish. They want to give them fish. That's what Social Security is. And like I say, the GOP is not exempt from this. Don't think I'm just picking on liberals here. They're just as culpable and guilty as anybody else. But the majority of the time, liberals are giving people fish. And eventually, you're going to run out of fish. But teaching people to fish, well, then they can go catch their own fish, and they don't have to worry about it. Like Thomas Wichter on Twitter. You should absolutely follow this guy. Very, very interesting insights. He's kind of calmed me down a lot in the past couple of weeks. Like, you know, he's got this whole, like, really just don't worry about it. You know, everything's going to be fine. Trump's on the job. And he explains how and why very well. So far as Twitter goes, very well. I wish the guy had, like, a website or like, he used his YouTube channel or something. I would watch this guy's videos every day. But he made a very insightful comment that the left generally, specifically like communists and anarchists and people like that, they think that wealth is a pie. So you have this pie that they always bring up, like the top 1% of earners take like the top 40% of wealth or whatever the fuck it is, whatever statistic they're bandying about this week. So they think that there's this finite amount of wealth, and it's in this pie. And the majority of the pie is ate up by a small number of people. This is true. However, it's their fundamental breakdown is that pie is a false construct. It's not a pie. I'm quoting him directly. It's not a pie. It's a pie factory. So if you just kind of like Mark Levin keeps talking about, if you unleash the economy, it doesn't become a pie like it is in socialist countries like Venezuela, where the top percent of people, the party members, get the majority of the pie, and everybody else is left to fucking eat out of literally out of garbage bins. And he's arresting bakers and shit like that for you're spending your sugar allotment on sweets instead of baking bread for the people. You're obviously the evil ones here, not us, who tried to set in price controls that never fucking work. I've yet to see. I have a friend who has told me that there is an example of price controls working, and it was in America, but it was repealed in like the 1950s or something like that. And that kind of says to me, like, I haven't looked into it, I might be wrong about this, but that kind of says to me that it wasn't working and it needed to go. But you cannot predict the price of something. You cannot predict scarcity. And that's inherently what drives the market. Like, I am not an economist, okay? But even I understand the basics of supply and demand. So you have a certain supply. I'll just go ahead and break it down to my understanding, and you can tell me if I'm full of shit. To my understanding, you have a certain amount of a thing. Let's call it oil. Okay, so we have a certain amount of oil, and we use this oil for all kinds of different things. Now, if you have a lot of oil, all of those things that depend on that oil are going to be cheaper because it's cheaper to dig up and manufacture and process the oil. But if you have a smaller amount of oil, all of these things increase in price because there isn't as much oil, and because it is rarer, it is more rare, it is valued higher. You cannot predict that. You also can't account for people getting around that. Like, if there's oil and you put a price control on oil because there's not enough oil to go around, and then somebody comes up with a synthetic oil that does literally everything that oil does, but it's easy to make, and you can make as much of it as you want, then all of that shit is just, all those problems go away because now you have the synthetic oil. So you literally cannot predict this shit. You just have to let it develop as it will. And if a problem comes up, then somebody out there, if you give them the freedom to do so, will come up with a solution to that problem, a workable solution. And everybody will be better off for it instead of the government just fucking rationing oil, right? So this is what drives the economy, is scarcity. If you have a lot of something, it's cheap. If you have a small amount of something, it's expensive. Like a zombie apocalypse scenario. We're not going to be able to get like pepper and salt as easily as we are right now. Right now, you can just go to the fucking store and buy your pepper and your salt. In a zombie apocalypse scenario, you can't fucking do that. The stores are gone. The mines are empty. So pepper and salt are going to be, like, worth their weight in fucking gold. And this has happened before. There's a damn good reason that people traveled across the world in big fucking boats and in huge caravans for months at a time. They would leave their families behind and they would travel to foreign lands walking and riding horses to get spices and bring them back. This is just one example. It could be anything. The spices slot in this equation could be filled by anything. The oil slot could be filled by anything. Medicine, food, whatever. But the government cannot control that. And if you try to control that, you're going to fuck people, and it's going to lead to rationing. Because the government doesn't know how to just let people choose their prices for themselves. And, like, I'm not necessarily against, what do you call them? Anti-price gouging laws. You know, I don't think that you should be, you know, allowed to do a 4,000% increase in the cost of a product for no reason. Like, if it's that scarce, fine, go for it. Or if it's that hard for you to get and produce, fine, go for it. You know, but I actually saw a good argument against this, is that if, like, that thing is reasonably plentiful, then people are going to remember who fucked them without lube, and that company is going to go under because nobody's going to shop with them anymore. So by the choice, like, the market is not sentient. The market corrects. We say that the market corrects. It does, but not sentiently. It's the organic reaction of the people who make up the market deciding whether or not that thing is worth their money. So, if you look at wealth as a finite thing, like most communists do, then of course you're going to think that it's unfairly distributed. But if you look at wealth as something that is able to make more of itself, then it doesn't matter if it's unfairly distributed because a rising tide raises all boats. This happened in America. Everybody in America, the homeless people in America, have a higher standard of living than people in Venezuela. The underclass in America has a higher standard of living than people in Soviet Russia, like the average citizen in Soviet Russia. And I might be full of shit on that, but the reason that I, like, with regard to actual numbers, but the reason that I say that is, looking at the difference, I would much rather be homeless in the United States of America than an average citizen in Venezuela right now. Like, that's just, that, like, which would you rather be? Would you rather live in a country where you could go down to a fucking soup kitchen, you know, probably run by a church or something like that? Okay, you force me to pray. Fine, I'll pray. Yeah, thank you, Jesus, for this food. You know, no, can I eat, please? I would much rather do that. There's no soup kitchens in Venezuela. People are hunting rats and dogs and pigeons and digging through garbage. Like, average citizens are doing that in Venezuela right now. People are starving to death in Venezuela, like average people who have jobs that pay them. Like, the Venezuelan bolivar is worth shit right now. Like, last I checked, 5,000 bolivars is worth 28 cents. Let that sink in. I'm gonna get another beer. You let that sink in. So basically, this is like a really, really roundabout rant to explain how this is good. The DACA getting repealed is good. Jobs are technically a commodity. If you want to look at it like this, then jobs are a commodity. And if you have more people who are not contributing to your country's economy via things like remittances or just virtue of their illegal status because they're not paying taxes because they're fucking illegals, you're inherently going to have a leak in your economy and your economy is going to go down. Your production value of your country is going to go down. Your GDP, your real GDP, is going to go down. This is the problem with, like, the Dream Act. Or DACA, is it's allowing these people to come in and basically knock a big fucking hole in our economy and let all the water drain out. But yeah, I think I'm done. I think I'm done for right now. I've been going on for about $1.50. It'll probably be, I don't know, like $1.46 when you guys get to hear it, but I'll go ahead and do the last round of sponsors. And if you think I'm full of shit, then call me on it. You know, more than welcome. Go ahead. Call me on it. But that's my understanding of the scenario. And that's why I fall more on the right-wing conservative side of things, is I would rather be teaching people to fish than just giving them fish. Because eventually the store of fish that you're going to give them is going to run out. And we've seen this happen in the American economy over the past few decades. Like, it's happening right before our eyes. So yeah, this is not going to save America. Okay? This is not going to stop the economic collapse. Which is coming, by the way, which is coming. Be prepared. Prepare yourself accordingly. But it's a big step in the right direction. I would like to see Social Security get repealed. That would be my next thing if I were Trump. It's like, I'm the fucking president. You know, we're going to do this shit. I don't care how much of a pussy you are, Paul Ryan. The Band-Aid has to come off. It's unsustainable. It's a drain on the economy. A whole lot more people are going to die if we don't tear that Band-Aid off right now. And like I say, fuck the old people that paid into the system and want their money. Fuck them. They're selfish. They're selfish. I'm paying into that system right now, and I know for a goddamn fact I'm not going to see a penny of it, because in 20 years it's going to be fucking bankrupt. So let's just end it now. Let's just pull the fucking Band-Aid off. Let my generation get hit. You know, let the boomers get hit. Let the World War II generation that's still alive get hit. Let everybody who's basically older than 40 get hit. And then rebuild. Start anew. It's going to hurt. It's going to suck. People are going to die. But would you rather have, you know, like 4 million people die? Or would you rather have 100 million people die? We're at that point. We're at that point where that's the decision that has to be made. How many people do you want to die? Sorry, that got fucking dark. That got real fucking dark real fast. But I'll link the Breitbart article in the forward post and stuff like that so that you guys can see where I'm getting my information from and be sure that I'm not bullshitting you or anything. But yeah, let's go ahead and do the sponsors and then we'll shut it down because the goyim know. So first up in this round, there is Aaron Clary. Aaron Clary is America's older brother. He is the older sibling that you wish you had that would hit you upside the head and explain why you're fucking up and how not to fuck up in the future. He runs a consulting business at assholeconsulting.com. So if you have not legal advice, but just life advice that you want him to help you out with, he can do that for a nominal fee. I highly recommend it. He's saved people hundreds of thousands of dollars at this point. He also has a blog at captaincapitalism.blogspot.com. He has a podcast on SoundCloud and a YouTube channel. He's also on various social media like Gab and Minds and Twitter and stuff like that. He also has several books out, three of which I have done the audiobooks for. Poor Richard's Retirement is the most recent. It is a kind of treatise on how to achieve effective retirement in today's economy via minimalism. There is also Enjoy the Decline, a personal favorite of mine, which has informed much of my philosophy towards life over the past few years. And it teaches you how to live and accept with the death of the United States. So if you're worried about the way that the economy is going, as, you know, I just demonstrated, it's not really going in a good direction. Trump's trying, but the Band-Aid's going to hurt when it comes off. Then you can pick up that book, and that book will teach you how to effectively enjoy the destruction of this great country that we all love. And if you don't love it, you should, because it's literally holding up the world economy. Literally. On dreams and unicorn farts. Our money is worth nothing. But don't tell, like, the Chinese that. He also has Reconnaissance Man. Reconnaissance Man. That's the name of that book. And that is about how you shouldn't waste your life doing shit that you don't want to do, basically. Very good for younger people. Highly recommended. If I had had this book when I was 16, I would not be in the place that I'm at right now. Like, I would probably have a real audiobook, like, company right now if I had had this book when I was 16. So go and buy it. You will not regret it. And also, most of the stuff that he gets in his consulting business, the questions that he gets, are answered by these books. So if you want to not pay, like, the $35 for a video response or $25 for an email response that Aaron usually charges, go and spend, like, $5, $8, $10 on these books, and they will give you the steps on how to self-actualize and take care of yourself. You know, go get bachelor pad economics. If you're in college or you're about to go into college, go get Worthless, the young person's indispensable guide to choosing the right major. If you're worried about the way that the country is going, go get enjoy the decline. If you want to find out how you can actually retire feasibly, go get Poor Richard's retirement. It's cheaper than going to him and asking him these questions and paying him that amount of money. Promise. I have several of his books and I've enjoyed every single one of them, and they have a lot of good information in them. I can personally attest, not just because the guy has paid me before. I was reading Aaron's stuff and buying his books and watching his YouTube channel years before I got in touch with him about doing audiobooks for him. Like, it's been about 4 years I've been listening to his YouTube channel. Like, back when Honey Badger Radio started out on Blog Talk Radio, that's how I found Aaron. When Honey Badger Radio started, like, 3-4 years ago, Aaron took out advertising space with them. And I went and looked him up, and thank God I did. You know, he did some fucked up shit with, like, doxing Barbarossa and Stardust back in the day. But I'm not fucking worried about that. Nothing ever really came of it. That's all in the past. It doesn't really matter. So next up, we have John E. Boyle. And I swear to God, I am basically done with this book. It's in the editing stages right now. The reason that I say it's in the editing stages is because the way that I get these books is via Kindle. They're on my desktop Kindle app. That's how I read them generally. And the way that the Kindle app works is that it picks up exactly where you left off. So if I open up my Kindle right now and pull up Queen's Heir, it's going to go to the last page that I was on, which is somewhere near the end. But if I wanted to go and edit, like, the prologue, I would have to go all the way back. And, like, this is the problem, is that some of these books don't have an interactive table of contents. So I can't pop open my Kindle version, my desktop Kindle version of Queen's Heir, go to the table of contents, go to chapter one or the prologue, follow along with the audio and edit that. And then when I'm ready to record, I can just go and see which chapter I was about to record next and then click on that in the table of contents. I can't do that. So I just read the whole book and then I edit it. Cause I can just go back in my Kindle, start it over, and work from basic principles, you know, work from the start, get to the end. It's a lot easier that way than trying to find where I was, especially with ebooks, because God fucking, like, there's not pages, which is understandable because, you know, like, you can turn your Kindle sideways and then the page is a completely different fucking size and stuff like that. So I understand why Kindle is structured the way that it is. It's just frustrating for somebody like me. But anyway, John. John is a hell of a guy. Very patient, very kind, very nice. And he has written an excellent book. And I'm not just saying this because I'm getting paid to do his audiobook. I'm actually really enjoying this book. Queen's Heir, which you can find a link to on the sidebar of my blog. He's technically one of the sponsors just because, like, he's been so damn nice about this book taking this long, which, I mean, it's a fucking doorstop, fam. It's huge. It's immense. And it's the first one in the series. It's great. It's huge. And it's the first one in the series. So I'm very excited to read the rest of these. Like, I'm going to go buy him anyway. Even if he doesn't contract me to do the next audiobook, I'm going to go and buy it anyway, just because I want to find out what happens. Because it's becoming more and more obvious that this is not the end of the story. I'm getting, like, 90% of the way through the book, like, basically to the end, where all of the appendices and everything is cropping up. And it's like, you know, this story, it doesn't end here. But it's a fantasy set among the Hittites at the end of the Bronze Age, and it is very entertaining. It has swords, it has sorcery, it has axe maidens, it has boat trips. It's kind of like the Odyssey, honestly. Like, not quite, but kinda. It's all told from the main character's perspective. He's, like, telling you the story, like, I went here, I did this, that kind of thing. Very well put together. The writing is phenomenal, at least so far as I'm concerned. There's, like, typos and shit, but, I mean, it's a self-published book on Kindle. You know, there's going to be typos. I'm not making too big. That's a nitpick. That's not important. Overall, the book is really good. Really good. And you can get it for, like, $5 on Kindle. And it's absolutely worth your fucking time. So I highly suggest that you go over there and you check that out right now. And look for the audiobook coming in the next, I don't know, next month. Maybe not the next month, because it's probably going to take me, like, this book is huge, fam. It's probably going to take me a while to edit this. And then it takes, like, 2 weeks once he uploads the files to, like, the process is going to be, I'm going to edit these files and I'm going to send them over to Christopher Warren. He's going to clean them up and then I'm going to send them to John. And then John's going to upload, he's going to make sure that they're okay. And then he's going to upload them to, Audible, and Audible is going to take, like, 2 weeks to verify that all of the files are proper and correct. And then it's going to go live. So it could be, like, like 2 weeks for me to edit, and then, you know, 4 or 5 days for Chris to do all of the audio mixing, and then another 2 weeks for Amazon to get off their lazy asses and actually put it up on Audible. But it's coming soon. I can promise you that. So yeah, go check out John's book. He really is a hell of a guy. Nothing but love for the man. I really appreciate him being this patient with me. So go check that out. I would consider it a personal favor if and you did. Next up, we have the affiliate accounts. And the basic through line with the affiliate accounts is that you're not being charged anymore, and the person selling the product is not taking a hit to their profits. The website is giving me a cut of their profits for sending traffic to them. And I have three of them to cover all of your needs here. So we have the Amazon affiliate account. So if you need anything on Amazon, just go to my website first and just whitelist me. Like, I'm not going to ask you to turn off Adblock. I use Adblock. I use Brave. I switched over to Brave because of the Google thing. I deleted Chrome and I moved over to Brave. And Brave has an automatic ad blocker. Like, it does it. So now if I ever want to read anything that's like, hey, we noticed that you're using ad blocker, whitelist us or you can't read the rest of this article. Just like, all right, right click, copy link address, archive.is, paste. Hey, I can read your article now. Fuck you. But yeah, just whitelist my blog on your ad blocker, and you'll be able to see the Amazon affiliate account link. And then you just click on that. You go buy whatever you want. It has products on it, like on the advertisement on my blog, but it doesn't really matter. You can buy whatever you want, and then I'll get a cut of Amazon's share of the profits. So really good little system. If you want to help me out, that's one way that you could do it. Next, we have mycomicshop.com, which if you have been following John De La Rose, you will know that the new series of XO Manowar, the robot fighter. I remember that series when it fucking first came out back in the day, back in like the 90s or the 2000s or something. It was awesome, man. Like, this dude would just, like, he had the suit and he would just rip robots in half. It was beautiful. Great artwork. The new one looks really cool too, and John has been talking up a fucking storm about it. So go check out John De La Rose's Twitter feed and look for his, like, tweets about XO Manowar and Valiant. Valiant is the company that publishes the comic book, which they also do Faith, which is like the fat acceptance superhero, but that doesn't really come up in XO Manowar. That looks like a straight up pulp action adventure story. So go check out John and then go look up XO Manowar via mycomicshop.com affiliate account, which they have everything, guys, like everything. Like, if you want Marvel, why you would want Marvel in DC, I have no fucking idea. But if you do, they have it. They also have them used. They have old issues. They have Golden and Silver Age stuff. They have really rare shit. They have really common shit. They have full collections. They have a really nice wish list program where they'll send you an email whenever something that you want comes up. You got to be quick, though. If there's anybody else that wants it, they could snipe it before you get there. That's happened to me a couple of times. But it's a really good service. Your shit always arrives promptly and well protected. The packaging is really nice. I've never had damaged comics arrive from mycomicshop.com. So I highly recommend this service. I've been using them for a couple of years. Very happy with it. Next, we have RideStuffAnime.com. RideStuffAnime is basically mycomicshop.com for weeaboos. If you need anything related to anime, manga, they got Nendoroid figurines, they got the Gundam figurines, they got audio drama CDs, they got music, they got porn, there's porn, they got, I think they sell Dakimakuras, the body pillows. They sell gear. Like, I got a Dragon Ball hat, that I really, really like. I love this hat. I wear it everywhere. It's awesome. It kicks so much ass. I'm revealing my power level here, but, it's a great service and I've never had any problems with them. They also have, like light novels and shit like that. So if that's more your speed, if you like anime stuff, manga stuff, go check them out. Highly recommended. Very good service. Next, we have Project Wonderful. If you want to advertise on the blog, but you don't want to pay a lot of money, you can go look me up on Project Wonderful under Jim Fear 138 Audio Productions. And you will find me. My ad box has been delisted due to low performance, which is understandable. But if you want to have like 24-hour advertising on the blog, you can go over there and pay literally pennies for it. It's not the best advertising, but it's there and you really don't have to pay a lot of money. But if you want a more semi-permanent solution for ads on my website, then you can come and contact me via the contact form on the side of the blog. And for $20 a month, I will pimp your shit. You will get, for 4 podcasts, which should be a month. Occasionally, I fall off for a week. But for 4 podcasts, for the length that it takes me to put out 4 podcasts, you will get a spot in the ad roll that I'm doing right now. You will get a advertisement on the website, premium ad space right at the top of the page for your thing with a link to it. And I will make a post shilling your shit. I will share that post around on social media, and I will also make social media posts specifically devoted to your thing. And if you want, because my VidMe and my YouTube and like Dailymotion is basically defunct, I will make a video for it, advertising it, and I will put it up on those, because I get a certain amount of hits every time I post a video on YouTube. It's not really that many anymore, because I've kind of, like, after this shit with YouTube went down, I gave up on the fucking platform. I don't care about YouTube anymore. But if you want, I will put a video up there. We can talk it out when you get in contact with me. But for $20 a month, or for the time it takes me to get through 4 podcasts, that sounds like a pretty sweet deal to me. So just get in touch, and we'll hammer that shit out. Next up, we have the Bandcamp. And you're going to be wanting to watch this space. It's got some old, like, narrations from 2014 on there. But in the future, it's going to have new shit that you're going to be able to get. Basically, old public domain pulp stories. And those are the things that went out to the patrons first. And now they are available to the general public for a nominal fee. They're not going to be expensive. We're talking, like, $1 to $5, depending on the length of the story. So if you want to support me, you can go over there and get some of my older narrations. The audio quality right now isn't the best, but the new stuff that I will be putting up will be really, really good audio quality, I promise. Better than the podcast, and the podcast is pretty fucking good if I do say so myself. Next up, we have audio commissions. This is the last one, last but not least, audio commissions. If you have a thing that you want read, I will read your motherfucking thing, dude. I will absolutely read it. It can be a novel, it can be a short story, it can be an issue of a magazine, it can be a novelette, a novella, a funny fucking post that you found on 4chan, because nobody has the rights to that, a public domain story that you want read, whatever. Whatever. Get in touch with me, and we'll hammer out the details. I'm not picky about genre, or style of writing, or style of literature, or whatever. If you want me to read a textbook, I'll read a textbook. If there's graphs and shit, we're going to have to talk about that, but that's just an extra step. I'm willing to do for flat rate, which means you're hiring Dimension Bucket Media, so you're hiring me to do the recording and the editing, and you're hiring Christopher Warren, our professional audio engineer, to do the audio mastering. And if you want music, the audio mastering is an extra $50 on top of what I would charge you, just for me. But if you want, we have an option for music, so if you want an original music track, an original, specifically made for your book, audio track, music track, for like the opening credits and the ending credits, or the chapter transitions, if you want it to fade in at the end of a chapter and fade out at the beginning of the next chapter, we can do that. That costs extra, though, because that's a little bit more work. But we could do that, and that's $25 per minute of music. So for $25, we'll make you a minute of music, we'll put it in the fucking credits, and your audiobook will sound like it came out of Blackstone. But that is entirely up to you. I'm also available for royalty work. So if you don't have the money to cover the flat rate right now, which is fine, you can get in touch. We can go through the audiobook creation exchange, and they will arbitrate royalties. But I'm kind of fucking you there, because the flat rate is what I value my work at, and you're just paying a one-time fee. The royalty work means that every time, in perpetuity, that is sold on audible.com, that audiobook is sold, I get like 40% of the profit. So it really all depends on what you're okay with. I'm willing to do both. Just, it all depends. So, just get in touch via the contact form on the blog. There is a line right now. Like I say, I'm finishing up Queen's Air. I'm about to start on Kirsova issue 5. And John Mollison's Sudden Rescue. And those will be coming out shortly. And then after that, I have a couple of other people that have gotten in touch with me. Like the guy, Michael Kingswood, who wrote the Glimmervale Chronicles. He wants me to do the first one of that. And Frank Servi wants me to do The Bro Next Door, which is like an erotica comedy novel. So I'm excited to see what that's about. It looks very, very interesting. But that's the line right now. Beyond that, I don't really have a whole lot of jobs. Well, Alexander over at Kursova wants me to do a lay bracket anthology that he's thinking about kickstartering. Is that even a fucking word? Anyway. But it's going to be awesome. But there is a line. So if you get in touch with me, just like there are people who were here before you. So it's going to take me some time to get to your thing. But if you don't mind waiting and, you know, you want the quality and you don't want to pay a whole lot of money for it, you can come to me. We'll hook you up, fam. But all right, that's the podcast. Thank you guys for listening to me fucking ramble for 2 goddamn hours. I'm sorry about like the dark turn at the end there, but I get heated about economics for some fucking reason. But yeah, much love, everybody. Thank you all very much for listening. Like I say, you can support me on Patreon, whatever. All of the things in the sponsors. There's links everywhere. Just go check them out. And I will catch you guys next week. Peace out, everybody.